Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. How are you doing in this lovely summer sunshine? I hope things have calmed down just a little bit, I hope, in terms of the weather where you are. It's so British, isn't it? They start every conversation about the weather. Anyways, I hope things are going good for you. It's been a very interesting week in the news. As I'm sure you know, there's been a lot about alcohol, some really devastating stuff coming out about the effects of lockdown and deaths and illness linked to alcohol. That was a pretty powerful piece. And then there was the piece earlier at the beginning of the week that I was just amazed to see, amazed and delighted, actually, to see the truth being spoken in the study around how alcohol exacerbates aging and just some of the many ill effects. And I looked at this study and I thought, hold on a minute, unusually, it doesn't seem to have a caveat at the end saying, oh, but, you know, some of it's good for you and all of that. And you will have heard me speak many, many times about how that those kinds of articles were the ones I focused on, and there are many of them. And, you know, I didn't notice very many, certainly years ago, that told it like it is. So I really honed in on this one and thought, do you know what? I really want to get the study lead of this study onto the podcast. And lo and behold, I managed to get hold of her. I'm really pleased with myself because it was just a fantastic conversation. Really, you know, I mean, serious and quite heavy going, but wow, we actually got some truth. So yeah, I'm going to bring that interview to you. It's so good to hear this stuff from a totally scientific perspective. This is not just my experience or a bit of fluff. This is science. This is real research that's been done, analysis. And so, yeah, going to be speaking to the lead author of this Oxford Population Health Study linked to alcohol. I'm going to be bringing you that in a moment. But before we do that, obviously, my advice to you is keep the ritual, change the ingredients, whether you're early days or whether you've been, you know, stopped drinking for ages. It's been so many people recently in the Sober Club who've said that sort of classic thing. You know, I thought I was doing really well, and then I went to a barbecue, or I went on a camping trip, or I met up with some friends and there we were in the sunshine, and suddenly out of nowhere, the wine witch appeared and told me that it would be a really good idea, you know, to have a cocktail or whatever. So this does still pop up because it's so ingrained in us and for so many years. And of course, culture supports that that's what we do. So we do need great alternatives. We really do. And I'm so thrilled that this week we've teamed up with this absolutely fantastic brand, Marie Laveau. And it's a non-alcoholic spiced spirit. So it's a alcohol-free rum, if you like. And it's really funky. I mean, I often talk about how great it is that alcohol-free drinks look nice now. You know, it's not just, okay, you can have something that doesn't have alcohol, but you've got the crappy bottle while everyone else has got the nice bottles. This is just, it's just the most lovely thing to have on the shelf, inspired by the legend of the New Orleans voodoo queen, Marie Laveau. And I was reading a little bit about the background to this brand. It's so fascinating because it's a smooth blend. They say the kind of marketing thing is that it's a smooth blend of sweet vanilla with a warm, spicy finish, distilled non-alcoholic rum alternative, handcrafted, produced in small batches, and provides a smooth blend using classic rum spices and botanicals. And the background to this, the branding, I mean, she sounds like my kind of woman, this Marie Laveau. She was a spiritual healer, an advisor, and a really complex, charismatic woman who was not afraid to challenge the norm. And her legacy lives on today. So New Orleans is the spiritual home of this non-alcoholic spiced spirit. And you can have it over ice with maybe some cola, some nice cola and a wedge of lime. Or, as I say, you can have your virgin cocktail. Mojito lovers, listen up to this, because you can literally have your mojito with the classic rum flavours, but obviously without the booze. What's not to like? So it's a really, really lovely brand. You can get it in the UK and get it in the US. It's marie-laveaudrinks.com. It's sold on Amazon as well. And just for a couple of weeks, we've got a special discount. So if you want to try some, if you go to marie-laveau-drinks.com, marie-laveau-drinks.com, or just go to the show notes or go to the Sober Club and click through there. You need to use the code Janie20, so Janie20, and then you get a 20% discount at the checkout at marie-laveau-drinks.com. So check the show notes and you'll find the link there. Really worth it. I mean, it's worth it even if you just want to look at the bottle, because it's really gorgeous. But it tastes fantastic. Such a good virgin mojito. It really, really is. So, so that's Marie Laveau. Really pleased that they're part of the podcast this week. Going to have a competition. I'm hoping to win some as well. So as promised, I'm going to bring you this interview with Anna Tupperwali. Just before I do that, just a quick reminder that there's still some places left on Sober by the Sea. We put a second date in on August the 21st, Sunday, August the 21st. So if that's for you and you've been thinking about coming, come along, treat yourself. It's an afternoon of focusing on you. We create a vision board. We have a little one-to-one coaching thing. We just focus on what it is you want. It's just a really lovely, quite transformative afternoon. It doesn't matter what stage you're at, by the way. If you're brand new to all of this and you're still drinking, but you're kind of sober curious, that's fine. And if you've been sober for 5 years, that's fine too. It doesn't matter, because we're focusing on what's next. We always focus on what is it we want. You have to kind of know that first. And amazingly, a lot of us don't really, because alcohol has numbed us out for so long and done that thing where it takes the edge off our joy. You know, that expression, alcohol steals your joy. It really does. I love it when I read posts in the Sober Club from people who, you know, they start to notice little things. There was a lovely post today from someone who said, I don't know if it's linked, but my eyesight is feeling better. I don't need my reading glasses. I mean, that's a thing, right? That's a thing. It definitely helped my eyesight when I stopped drinking. But she also said, and I've started to really enjoy things that I used to enjoy years ago. I've kind of dug out all my, old videos, or started watching things that I watched years ago, and I'm really enjoying rerunning them. And it's exactly like that. You know, our enjoyment of little things, it changes so much. We're able to get the dopamine hit in a much gentler way that's actually good for us, or at least not going to cause us any issues, because we're all dopamine seeking ultimately, aren't we? We all seek pleasure, of course we do. But when we can appreciate the pleasure in little things, it makes just so much difference to our lives. Anyways, this interview is just, it's so powerful to actually hear from someone I know. I know you've been hearing me banging on for years and years. I know that you've heard my opinion. I know that you've read my book, some of you. Happy, Healthy, Sober, by the way, if you haven't. I know that you've read, you know, William Porter's books. And William has done some fantastic stuff around the logic piece about alcohol. Annie Grace has got, you know, fantastic books and her own studies into this. But this is another level up from all of that stuff, because it's the actual real deal of the scientific study. And if you've got someone that you need to convince that there are no benefits to alcohol, then this podcast is going to do it for you. So enjoy the interview with Anna Tupperwali.
Well, many of you will have heard me talk on this podcast regularly about studies that come out in the media, and we get to see the headlines, and sometimes we look at the actual study. And for so many years, we've all been seeing these studies that tell us that alcohol is good for us. And usually at the bottom of the piece, it will say, oh, in moderation. But obviously, we don't notice that bit. And you'll have heard me say millions of times that it's what kept me stuck for years and years, you know, reading these pieces that that in fact alcohol was good for you, glass of red wine or any of that nonsense. But I was just amazed and delighted this week to find that researchers from Oxford Population Health have published results from a new genetic-based analysis that suggests that alcohol directly accelerates aging by damaging DNA in telomeres. And the findings are published in Molecular Psychiatry. This was across the press earlier in the week. And I couldn't believe it. You know, finally, something that tells it like it is, and not only tells it like it is, about aging, which is, of course, something that I've been talking about for ages. I've long said, you know, that ditching the booze is the best anti-aging secret ever. And I hold to that. So I'm really delighted that my guest is senior clinical researcher, Dr. Anya Topiwala from Oxford Population Health. Anya, thank you so much for agreeing to be part of this. I really appreciate it.
Oh, pleasure. Thanks for asking me.
And you were the study lead on this piece, and I want to talk about it in detail. But just before we do that, just before we opened up the microphones, I was saying that, you know, I was asking you about studies generally, and apparently you've done quite a few that have told it like it is, as it were.
Yes, so my primary interest, I'm a psychiatrist by background, is the effect of drinking on the brain and on memory function. And we've done quite a few studies because, as you mentioned, the narrative was always, yes, okay, if you drink a lot of alcohol over long periods of time, that was bad. But, you know, maybe a glass of red wine a day is good for your brain. And actually, we haven't found that at all across two or three studies now, where we've shown that even really quite small amounts of drinking is associated with harmful brain volumes and worse memory decline.
So yeah. Is it actually linked to Alzheimer's, or would that be too strong to say?
So we haven't looked at Alzheimer's per se as yet. We've done a lot with brain imaging, which is actually more sensitive.
Right.
You can pick up more subtle changes years before the memory symptoms. And we found that more drinking is literally smaller brain volumes, so just a smaller brain size. And actually, the week before last, we published showing that drinking was associated with higher iron in the brain, which in turn is linked to Alzheimer's. And we were seeing results at only 7 units of drinking a week. So, you know, 2 large glasses of wine, we started to see effects a week. So not much.
Interesting. Isn't that interesting? So if you've done a fair bunch of these kind of studies, you must feel as frustrated as I do that the majority of what we see in the mainstream press is, unless that's just my perception, we tend to see these studies that say, oh, it's good for you. I mean, I read one the other day, and I'm trying to remember where it was, where the study was done, that said alcohol is good for you as long as you're over 40, or some kind of absolute nonsense.
Yeah, that was a study 2 weeks ago. You're right. It was published in The Lancet, very good journal.
Yes, that's right. Which
it didn't look at actually brain outcomes and mental health outcomes, which is my primary focus. But I think that's one of the reasons we've done this genetic analysis, because especially for more sort of moderate drinking levels, there are loads of other factors that are probably responsible and I think causing these spurious protective effects. So to give you an example, so the kind of people that drink moderately are better educated,
probably eat better,
exercise more, do everything else in their lives is probably healthier apart from the drinking.
Exactly.
And all those factors mean that their brains are healthier, for instance.
Yeah. So they're healthy despite the alcohol. Exactly. They've lucked out, but not because of it.
It looks like it's protective, but that's probably just a spurious, that's my belief, that it's a spurious protection. And actually, as I said, all the imaging studies we've done, it looks like it's harmful.
Right. Wow. I mean, honestly, with that, armed with those studies, it must feel very frustrating for you when you constantly, I mean, just, yeah, I know we're going slightly off track for a moment, but I just find it fascinating the level of marketing that we have thrown at us the whole time. You know, of course it's legal, of course it's part of our society, of course it's part of our culture, but for God's sake, you can't buy a birthday card for a 21-year-old boy, you know, without it having a picture of booze on. I mean, you just can't.
No, absolutely. And like you mentioned at the beginning, you know, we've all got what you call a, you know, selective bias.
Yes.
We see the one out of even 100 studies showing that the red wine, the glass of red wine is good for us. We love to believe it.
Yeah.
But I just don't think it's borne out with the evidence personally.
Yeah. And of course, there was also a piece this week in the press about the effects of lockdown drinking, which was really shocking, actually. Mm. Just the fact that the goddamn, you know, off licenses were all left open and the gyms closed. I mean, what did they think was going to happen, right?
Yes, exactly.
That was really sad, actually, that you know, when they really look at the knock-on effect of that.
I'm sure, and we haven't captured it all yet, I'm sure.
We'll start to see. Yeah. So just tell us a bit about your work then. Is you know, what kind of stuff do you do? Is it all studies across different health topics, or how does it work?
So my work, more recent work, has been very large samples using brain imaging and memory tests, and I've had a particular focus of interest on alcohol because so many people do it. And like you say, the studies have been really conflicting and this so-called protective effect, and thinking about, you know, what I know about alcohol and how it works.
Yeah.
I just didn't believe it. You know, we know it's a toxin. It literally kills brain cells. I just couldn't quite believe there was a protective effect. And I thought this is a sort of topic which merits further investigation with different methods, you know, brain imaging, genetics, like some of these more sophisticated methods to try and get to the bottom of the question.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad you've done this work. And what's really interesting about this one then is that, you know, that it's basically saying that the findings could implicate alcohol with age-related diseases. So just tell us a bit about this particular study then. So what does it mean if it's a genetic-based analysis? Exactly what does that mean?
Yeah, so we looked at the links between how much people were drinking and the length of what you call telomeres. So as we grow and get older, the cells in our body have to divide. And in that process of dividing, they have to copy the DNA. And each time the DNA is copied, it gets slightly shorter, just a quirk of the copying process. So the length of these telomeres gives you an idea of aging, so what we call is like a marker of biological age. And as these things get shorter, you increase your risk for things like Alzheimer's disease, heart disease, cancers.
Yeah.
So the shorter they are, the worse.
And our telomeres, is it a bit like the sort of neuroplasticity of the brain? You know, can we kind of repair a little bit, or is it a case of once you've shortened it, that's it?
So I can't say for definite with the effect of drinking, but so in babies or in fetuses there's a repair mechanism,
right?
But by adulthood, most of our body cells, there's no that repair mechanism is lost. So I can't think of a way, well, at least that I'm aware of, in which that could be repaired.
The good news though, of course, on a side note, is that the liver, until it gets too far, is really good at repairing, so it's never too late to ditch the booze.
No, exactly. And you're trying to reduce your risk of this stuff getting worse. So
yeah, exactly.
And the other thing that we found was the dose was important. So the dose of alcohol, so the more you drank, the worse it was. So even reducing what you're drinking is probably going to benefit you.
Yeah. Okay. So telomere, how we say it, telomere, you say it, is this indicator of biological aging. Once that they're too short, the cells can't divide. I think I understand that correctly. So in this analysis, you how many participants were there, and how did you gather the participants? Literally from a sort of bank of DNA, is that how it worked?
So no, the study is called the UK Biobank, which is a huge study of middle-aged UK individuals from the UK. There's a whole team, and it's not just me, that they've done all the hard work. I got the easy job. So we looked at just under 250,000 of these people who had telomere measurements on their blood a blood sample, and who also had information about their drinking, all sorts of other factors that we took into account, you know, how much they exercised, what they ate, whether they smoked, other health conditions to take into account. And so we did two types of analysis. So we just looked at the sort of, use the more standard approach, where we looked at how much they were drinking and the telomere length. And then the other aspect was the genetic analysis. And the reason for that was what we were talking about earlier, because there are all these different factors that could be different in drinkers versus non-drinkers that may be important. And it's very difficult to take account of all of them.
Yeah.
We use the associations between genes that predispose you to drink more and the telomere length. And that gets around some of these problems, some of these other factors. And so if you get an association, you can be more confident that it's the alcohol causing the telomere shortening rather than something else that we haven't taken account of.
I want to go back to the findings of the study in a moment, but tell me a bit more about these genes that predispose you to drinking more. What do you mean by that?
So there are genes that if you took a group of people, there are certain genes that mean that those people would drink more on average than other people if they have them. So to take an extreme example, if you think about Southeast Asians, there is a gene that predisposes people to have a flush reaction if they drink alcohol. You may have seen them. So if they literally have a drink or two, they go red, they feel sweaty and unwell. So people who have that gene tend to drink less alcohol because they get very unpleasant
effects. Doesn't make them feel well.
Exactly. So in Europeans, we don't have that an extreme reaction, but there are a number of other genes that have smaller effects that if you have them mean you might be more likely to drink more or less.
That's very interesting. Tell me about, I read in your study where you said the most, it was written, the most influential genetic variant in the MR analysis was ADIHR, an alcohol metabolism gene.
ADH1B.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right. Yeah, it's just the name of the gene in Europeans that explains the most of drinking.
Okay.
So, and it's a gene that affects how we break down alcohol in our bodies.
Ah, okay.
So,
interesting.
We don't completely understand it. The component of alcohol that does the damage probably is ethanol.
Ethanol, yeah.
And so that gets broken down to this nasty chemical called acetaldehyde in the body, and then that gets broken down too. So that acetaldehyde is not nice. We don't like it, doesn't make us feel good. So that gene affects the speed at which the ethanol is broken down.
So in other words, some people effectively break it down quicker than others more effectively.
And somehow that affects how much we drink. I don't know if that means those people feel subtly worse when they drink, or maybe they get worse hangovers or something that we don't understand means that they tend
and
to
I'm
drink.
Guessing it's different in men and women as well because of how our bodies are made up. Is that linked at all?
So really? Men and women definitely metabolize alcohol differently, but that, as far as I understand, that's more about how the ethanol gets distributed in our body.
Yeah,
because women have more fat than men, so it sort of, we get a higher level for the same amount of drinking.
Yes.
So it's slightly different, but there certainly are differences between men and women.
Right. I mean, even as we talk about this, what's laughable is, why the hell would we do this to ourselves?
Yes.
You know, even just having this conversation about, oh well, you might break down the poison slightly faster than I might. What the hell? How about not having the poison? Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, just back on your study then. Just tell us a little bit about what you found then in the observational analysis, because I know you said that there was a significant association between the higher alcohol intake and the shorter telomere length. So I think I read that you said compared with drinking less than 6 units of alcohol a week. So that, as you said, you mentioned this, this will be 2 large glasses of wine. It was associated between 1 and 2 years of age related change on telomere length. So does that mean over a couple of year period that telomeres will shorten?
So we can't say how long what the period would be because we just had a snapshot of people's drinking at one time point. So it's difficult to say, but we're trying to estimate and sort of give people an idea of how big the effect was. So people that were drinking more than 17 units a week had shorter telomeres than those that were drinking less than 6 units. Mm-hmm. And then the people that were drinking more, the effect was greater. And those who had a diagnosis of alcohol use disorder, so more severe end of the spectrum, the effect was even greater.
Yeah.
So it seems to be the higher dose of alcohol you have, the worse for the telomeres. And right. We tried to estimate, yeah, how did that association relate to that we see with aging? So as I mentioned, as we age, those telomeres get shortened. And we're saying that it's about equivalent to 1 to 2 years.
I see. Aging, as it were. Yeah,
exactly.
I get it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So really what this study is saying then, that, you know, even a small amount of alcohol consumption is going to effectively damage these telomeres, which could result in, you know, aging more quickly or having or living less. That's it in a nutshell, right?
That's what we're hypothesizing, that we're suggesting that alcohol is shortening these things and is putting you at risk of age-related diseases like Alzheimer's or cancers.
Yeah. Interesting. Now, what I also found interesting was that most of the participants in the study were currently drinking when they were observed when they did the study. 3% had never been drinkers, and 4% had been drinkers in the past.
Yes.
What's the relevance of that?
So we were actually quite shocked because this is not, I said to you, this is a group from the population, but this is not your average, if I just randomly selected 500,000 people from the street. Mm. You know, this is a group of relatively healthy people,
yeah.
Very middle class, you know, educated, because they signed up for a research study. So the first thing is that the rates of drinking was just so high. We were quite shocked. And actually, you know, more than half the sample were drinking over what the current guidelines are.
Yeah.
But sorry, you asked about the relevance of, so the question with these studies, and that was something I hadn't mentioned before, is that what are you going to use as the reference group? And so that's another reason why perhaps some of these other studies have shown protective effects of moderate drinking. Because if you choose your reference, if you're comparing the never drinkers or the non-drinkers,
yeah,
and then you look at the moderate drinkers, there might be this something called a sick quitter effect. So it may be that some of those people that don't drink now used to be extremely heavy drinkers.
Yes, exactly. So
they've
still got the residue.
Health problems.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why they stopped drinking.
Makes sense. Yeah.
And so therefore, they do worse on the other outcomes, and so it looks like moderate drinking is good for you. So we wanted to distinguish people that had never drunk, had previously drunk, and then were drinking the different amounts currently.
Right.
So that we could sort of try and tease out those effects.
Interesting. I mean, I would be really interested to know whether someone, you know, in my position, for example, someone who did drink too much for many goddamn years, you know, before I wised up. but now, you know, obviously doesn't drink at all. Whether I have managed to, you know, stop this in its tracks, as it were. I mean, I'm hoping I have. I certainly feel better, and I certainly feel younger.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's difficult to say that from this study, but certainly from what I know of the brain imaging studies. So, there is some evidence that in previously very heavy drinkers, you can reverse to some degree the brain changes and the memory loss.
Yeah.
If you stop drinking, so certainly, yeah. I mean, that is suggestive that it's not too late.
Amazing. What else can I ask you, or what else can you share with us that you found? I mean, I'm just thrilled to bits that you've done this study. Actually, I really am. I think it's great. Tell us anything else that you found that seems important.
I think just I'd emphasize that using the two different approaches and having consistent results across them is much more persuasive that it is the alcohol causing the damage. And as we said, it's really tricky to do these alcohol studies. There's so many other factors to take into account. And so, yes, we were very pleased that we had consistency of results. It's more convincing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know it's not your remit, it's not your within your job title, but how can we get the medical profession to take this on board? Because, you know, anyone listening to this podcast will know that one of the things that I get so frustrated by is, again, what kept me stuck for years, you know, feeling brave enough to say to a GP, you know, obviously I'd go for something else. And then I'd feel brave enough to say, actually, do you know something? I'm a bit worried about my drinking, actually. And the answer would always be, well, how much are you drinking? Well, obviously I lie. I mean, obviously everyone lies. They know you lie. So I'd say, well, you know, 2-3 glasses a night. And the answer would always be, well, have an alcohol-free day. Sounds normal. And you'd go off again thinking, oh, thank God for that. And you'd go back to your, you know, however many units a week, which is way over what anybody would recommend. And the reason is, as we all know, they're drinking too, the majority of them, number one. And number two, they don't know what to do with you. If you are clearly alcohol dependent, then that's different. They're going to hopefully help you find alcohol services or rehabilitation. But if you are what, you know, the term we now use is a grey area drinker. You're drinking way more than you should be drinking. And as your study shows, this ain't going to be good for you. This is not going to be good for the economy or for the NHS or for anybody else. So how can we get through to the medical profession?
It's very difficult. Well, I'm a consultant psychiatrist as well. So
I've got
two hats. But I think speaking.
But I suppose more, really I'm thinking more of GPs who are often the first line of contact.
Yes, I think, well, I'm hoping that, you know, our work and others that is emerging is, you know, we're really going to be changing perception for not just the public, but for medical profession as well and GPs alike. That actually,
I mean, am I right about this or not? Is it not the case?
I'm hoping it's changing. I think for a long time, and I think a lot of these studies citing a protective effect have not helped.
No, absolutely not.
And I'm hoping that slowly we're changing the perception of medical professionals as well. I think it often gets missed. I think at least my work in hospitals, we don't ask enough about how much people were drinking and people, like you say, might not volunteer.
Yeah. I mean, it's not only that you know, I have a friend who was being treated for breast cancer and this really was quite recently, was literally told, you know, after news like that, you're going to want to go home and have a large glass of wine. Mm. You know, I know they're just trying to be kind, but it's just such awful mixed messaging.
Yes. Well, I think the links with cancer are another sort of interesting
area.
I think the public are not aware of the links between alcohol and cancer.
I think we kind of are in our gut, but we don't want to believe it. And everything else, you know, as I say, these constant studies that show it's protective. Really don't help, as you
say. No, I mean, it's like you say, it's a wider societal issue, especially, you know, it's completely bound up in our culture and we celebrate and commiserate
exactly
with drinking, don't we?
Yeah.
So it's really tricky. It won't be a quick change, but, you know, it's happened for smoking. You know, that was also treated as healthy and by the medical profession.
True.
And there's been a sea change, but it does take time and a lot of studies, I think, showing the same thing probably to start changing opinion on it.
Yeah. So that is interesting then, in your work as a psychiatrist then, I mean, you must have seen the impact of alcohol.
Oh, hugely. I mean, the huge amount of comorbidity between drinking and depression and other mental illnesses.
Yeah. Well, that's another very interesting thing, because, again, you know, it's not talked about enough, that link between depression and anxiety and alcohol, mental illness and alcohol. It's really it's just not talked about. It's seen, you know, if you talk about that, it's seen as if you are, you know, trying to make light of mental illness, and that's not the case. The reality is, you know, no one's saying that one thing directly causes the other, but it definitely exacerbates it.
Hugely. I think it's just the beginning to be researched, the sort of overlap between the two conditions. And worryingly, at least in mental health services I've worked in, it's a barrier, you know, drinking is a barrier to accessing mental health services. It's often that, you know, if you've got a drinking problem, you're excluded from mental health services, or you're supposed to sort that out first before you get seen.
Well, and then, but then you say that, but then again, I've got I know lots of people, even people within my community in the Sober Club, who have you know, rocked up to a GP with you know, depression, anxiety. They're given antidepressants, and they're not asked about their drinking. They're never asked about their drinking. The number of the percentage of clients that I've had who have issues with drinking and they're on antidepressants, I couldn't believe it.
That's the concern, because like you say, you can't just treat one or ignore the other, because they're so interlinked. You need to sort of try and take a holistic approach and assess and manage both together.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just impossible to do one without the other.
Well, yeah, it's medicating on top of medicating, right? Well, I'm so thrilled you're doing this work.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Well done. It's lovely to have somebody like you who's actually on it. So maybe there will be a change. Let's have a chat in, I don't know, 6 months or a year, and maybe, you know, some of these studies will have actually properly hit home.
Yes, hope so. We're doing our best.
Yeah, you absolutely are. So if anybody wants to sort of have a look at any of this information, where would be the best place for them to go? Where the study's published, or what would be the
absolutely
best?
Well, you can go to my webpage at the University of Oxford, just type in my name, and there should be links to all the studies there. This particular one we've talked about today is in molecular psychiatry. It's all open access.
Great. But then some of the other ones you've done are on that
same
of
the other
link.
Ones that you can access by webpage.
Okay, I'm going to have a look at some of those, and maybe we'll have you back on to talk about one of the others. I really appreciate it, Anya. Thank you so much. It's
no
really
problem.
Great to chat to you. Thanks for being part of the podcast.
Pleasure. Thanks very much.
Kind of hard hitting, right? Tells it like it is. I'm so grateful to Anna for doing this for us, because, you know, people like Anna who work in that kind of profession, they often don't want to appear on podcasts. It's kind of not what they do, is it really? But I'm very grateful to her. I've also looked at some of the other studies that she's done, and I'm going to be writing a little bit about some of those. So keep your eye on the soberclub.com on the website, and we'll publish a little bit more insight into some of those other studies, because they don't get talked about enough. And I'd love to get Anna back on the show at some point as well. So let me know what you think. I'd love to know, you know, what you think about this podcast and any of the podcasts. I really hugely welcome your feedback. Please drop me a message. You know where to find me on social media. It's just at Janie Lee Grace. And of course, if you want support and connection and inspiration, please check out the Sober Club. It's very low cost. It's huge value. It really is. It's amazing support and connection. It doesn't matter where you are in the world. It doesn't matter what stage you're at. We are totally non-judgmental. But what you'll get there is like-minded people and a positivity and a kind of cheerleading. And, you know, that's what we need, isn't it? We all need people to support us. And your friends who are drinking, they're not going to be the ones who are going to do that. Similarly, your family, if anything, they're probably going to be the ones who say, oh, come on, don't be daft, just have one. So we need people who've been there, done it, got the T-shirt. We all need someone ahead of us, and we all need a tribe of people around us who are going after the same kind of thing. So it does make a huge difference. So please check out thesoberclub.com. And just to mention, by the way, for anyone who might be listening who is thinking of maybe changing career, or maybe adding something on to the work they already do, or just wants to dig deep into some of this stuff for personal transformation, my Sober Club coach training program, my Sober Coach training program, is happening again in September. We kick off with a couple of days live in-person training. The connection is wonderful. But I have to say, I've taken on a participant from the US because she really wanted to do this work. And well, why would I say no? It seems crazy. So I am also offering this as something that you can complete those first modules online, and then we'll connect one to one for the, you know, for the other bits. And then after those first 2 days, which is September 30th and 1st of October, if you are in the UK, then we have 5 weeks online of support and trainings, and that's followed by ongoing support. There's always support, and the training is fully comprehensive and covers absolutely everything. Coaching styles, everything you need to know around recovery coaching. It's not addiction counselling. This is aimed at people who are drinking more than they want to, but are otherwise functioning. And it's really about the sobriety piece and the well-being. We do a huge amount around how we can
you know, look at techniques which help resolve trauma, and on and on. And there's a whole section about how you can actually set up your business and promote your business if that's something you want to do. So I appreciate lots of you listening. This won't be for you, but just in case you know someone else, perhaps you have a therapist you go and see, or a someone that you go to for, I don't know, whatever it is, reflexology or Reiki, or maybe someone you go to as a coach. And perhaps they need to add these skills on into their toolbox, because let's face it, not enough people know where to signpost others who are struggling at the moment. I've said many times, I went to see therapists many, many times and shared with them that I was drinking too much. And, you know, it's not their fault, but they didn't know what to do with me. They didn't know how to support me or help me or even signpost me on, really. So so it is an area that we need more people doing this work. So if it resonates and it's of interest, then please just drop me a message. Find me on social media. Drop me a message and let's have a conversation and see if it's right for you. You know where to find me, thesoberclub.com, social media at Janie Lee Grace. Always reach out if you're struggling. If you've listened to this podcast today, it's actually really hit home that, you know, there ain't no benefits to alcohol. It's really toxic. You know, let's not sugarcoat it. Let's stop this absolute BS of red wine is good for the heart. It's not. Have a grape, right? Look after yourself. Take care of your body. It's the only one you've got. Take care of your mind. Take responsibility and don't do this anymore. You can choose, right? You can. Let's not sugarcoat it. And if this has really kind of got through to you today on this podcast, then do something about it. Take back control and take that step. I mean, crikey, I don't often get as hard hitting as that, do I? Anya's inspired me. So reach out if you need support. It's hard to do it on your own. When I first started, I had no idea how I was meant to do this. It felt impossible. It literally felt impossible. It isn't impossible when you connect with other people who've done it. It really isn't. So immerse yourself in the inspirational stuff. And, you know, if this is the first podcast you've listened to of mine, then you need to go back and listen to potentially hundreds of others, because there is so much inspiration and content there that will definitely keep your spirits up while you make this decision to, yeah, drop the spirits. And don't forget about the alcohol-free rum, the wonderful non-alcoholic spiced spirit, Marie Laveau. There's a discount code. It's only for a couple of weeks. Use the code Janie20. J-A-N-E-Y. That might be a capital J. I'll have to check whether that's case specific. But if you go to the show notes, you can use the link there. Janie20 for a 20% discount at marielaveaudrinks.com. I'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.